That's what it is, and we're back with our weekly Africa report. Today we focus on the just-ended African Union summit in Ethiopia. What does that promise? The Union has in the past promised African solution to African problems, but have we hit the jackpot this time? Nigeria goes to the polls on Saturday, but analysts warn the election might be one of the bloodiest. Online is foreign policy analyst and managing director at the Democracy Center in Zambia, Chris Zimba. Chris, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure once more to be on this platform, and greetings to our listeners across Africa.
Right, let's have a look. Africa Union Summit in Ethiopia. I think what is interesting out of that one is a focus on intra-African trade. And if African countries start trading with each other, South Africa could benefit to the tune of 33% from a base of 16%. In fact, our exports to Africa could double.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. The African Union, once more, through their presidential summit, did make a lot of positive pronouncements and a political commitment in terms of how to address the social, economic, and political challenges that the continent is engulfed in. It suffices to mention that the Africa Continental Trade Treaty is a very progressive one and it's very commendable. Africa, it's very important for Africa to begin to emphasize and to entrench the importance of trading between and among it themselves. African states, they are both a market as well as a source of raw material to themselves. If you talk about the 54 African countries, they are self-sufficient. They can produce and sell to themselves. So that treaty, the intra-Africa cross-border treaty to harmonize and entrench trade between and among African states within the framework of the African Union, it's very much commendable, and I think that is the way Africa should begin to discuss and begin to move. It is also within the very spirit of what is called the European Union or the Eurozone, where European countries trade and enhance bilateral and multilateral trade relations among themselves, and they try to eliminate as much as possible different tariffs and other barriers that may hinder commerce and trade among themselves. And I think it's good that the African Union is steering the continent towards some form of an economic union through that trade agreement. But otherwise, it has a lot of challenges, given that some countries are so huge in terms of economy. We are talking about Nigeria and South Africa, for example. You cannot compare them in terms of their GDP and their economic stamina with the countries such as Malawi or Gabon, or countries such as Swaziland. So it is the giant, it's the elephant versus the impala in terms of economic size and GDP. And when you say we are going to promote intra-trade among such players, where you have the economic superpowers such as South Africa and Nigeria, against the smaller ones such as South Africa and Swaziland and Malawi, you note that at some point you create the challenges where the smaller countries or economies will begin to maybe, we may not be very excited, because they may begin to feel that the bigger economic powers will swallow them. And I think I'll speak for Zambia. I've already heard the Minister of Finance and our government have indicated that they are not going to sign the treaty, the African trade treaty, before the AU now, because they need to consult widely and Zambia needs to make an informed decision. And I think that is also the position for a good number of other countries across Africa. But the bigger countries like South Africa, and who are going to be having the lion's share from such a treaty, I can assure you they are dancing, and they are willing to ensure that treaty is signed by everyone as soon as possible, because they will benefit handsomely, because South Africa, Nigeria, they are huge in terms of GDP as well as exporting.
Do you think that we need to take a real step back? Because Surely the benefits from this is, let's create a hypothetical situation. Let's say Nigeria says, okay, we are now going to trade with Zambia. Surely the positive spin-offs to a situation like this is Nigeria will say, okay, maybe to bring Nigerian fruit down to Zambia, we need to build a road, we need to build a railroad, we need to have transport. Surely this will encourage infrastructure development in the poorer countries.
I think the priority of infrastructure cannot be overemphasized. If I'm going to talk about intra-state trade across Africa, and I can assure you that that hypothetical position you have created is the best one, and I think to me that's the creativity. That is, I think, the narrative the World Bank has been advancing, where they are emphasizing that Africa needs to ensure that they improve infrastructure in terms of transportation so that there is a faster and efficient movement of trade and goods and services between countries. Suffice to mention that, in as much as we are talking about the intra-Africa trade now, in the context of the African Union, you discover that we have the headache and the challenges of transportation in terms of infrastructure in many countries. And I think to some extent, and to a great extent, this stands as one of the bigger obstacles and challenges in terms of enhancing smooth and efficient trade between and among countries. I will tell you something about Zambia and DRC Congo, for example. The main road which connects the Zambia to the Kasumbalesa border post, to DRC Congo, I can assure you, is marked with a lot of potholes around the Coca Belt in Zambia. And it slows down the movements of trucks that are heavy loaded and moving on this road every day. But that is not only the challenge we're having between Zambia and DRC Congo. It is a challenge I think you're going to find in many places, between maybe Mozambique and Zambia, between Tanzania and Rwanda, between DRC Congo and Uganda. You're going to find the same between Chad and Cameroon. You find the same between Ghana and maybe Togo. So infrastructure improvement and development must be a priority if we're going to talk about enhancing trade in the context of this treaty we are talking about. But I think on the other hand, it's very important to ensure that the narrative, the discussion of enhancing intra-Africa trade among states is already running, and countries are brainstorming, consulting, and begin to sign the treaty. While on the other hand, we're improving our infrastructure in terms of transportation. So we can do a simultaneous process so that we're not lagging behind. So it's meaning that we can't just be talking about developing and improving infrastructure and then close the discussion and the narrative of putting up a treaty where countries should begin to study and brainstorm on how they can engage and benefit from trade among us and between themselves. So it has to be a simultaneous process, and it has to be twofold. But the infrastructure issue is a big challenge and a headache between and among many countries across Africa. It's very different from the question of the Eurozone. In Europe, their trade and the commerce is very efficient and smooth because they can use the train system. It's very efficient and well connected between and among countries. They can use the water system. They are excellent. They have got big seaports that are well developed. They can handle different cargo. They can use air. They can use the road. They are all well developed and in super condition. In Africa, to be very honest, when you travel from one country to the other, one sub-region to the other, we discover that our transportation system is not only poor, but in many places pathetic, and in some cases even impossible. Impossible. If you talk about the Congo, just as a country itself, it's too vast. To travel from one corner to the other, for example, between Kinshasa to the other side of Congo, the eastern side of Congo, it may take you days, and if you are not using a reliable vehicle, it may take you even a week. Because between the Kinshasa and the other towns in the east, it's a bigger forest, and it's a jungle, and at some point it's impossible. So it's that a challenge we face when we're talking about promoting change.
Absolutely. Oh, sorry, Chris.
African countries.
Yeah, Chris, we're going to leave it there. We're going to cross live for the 4:30 headlines. We'll be back talking about Nigeria. But in the meantime, a fire has broken out at the Old Rahmania, which is currently the Turkish school, second school in the CBD to go on fire. Something is suspicious here, but let's go for the headlines.
Bulletin at 5, the ANC in the Western Cape is calling on residents from across Cape Town to occupy Whale Street on Friday. In other news, thousands of members of KASATU march through the provincial legislature in Johannesburg today demanding an end to loss of jobs through retrenchments. And finally, thousands of handheld devices needed to verify identities at Nigeria's election this weekend have been destroyed in a fire. Those are your headlines. More news at 5.
And we just got 4 minutes to conclude, but we cannot conclude without mentioning the situation in Nigeria over the weekend. Nigeria goes to the polls. Chris Zimba from Zambia, our expert online. Chris, what do you make of it? It seems as if Nigeria could be a very bloody election, according to commentary.
Well, it's quite interesting, but also at some point very unfortunate. Interesting in the sense that it is inevitable that Nigeria has to periodically go to a presidential and a parliamentary vote. That's a standard practice because it is by law that they are supposed to do so every 5 years. But the reason why I think also it's interesting is because going by what is happening in Nigeria, just like many African countries, I don't understand why we have subjected ourselves to this American model where every 5 years you have to vote instead of maybe 8 years or instead of maybe 10 years of his name. The challenge in Nigeria, I think, the way I said it's unfortunate, is because political violence has become the common denominator of the political campaigns in Lagos and across in Abuja and many parts of Nigeria this month. There is a tug of war, there is a political battle on the horizon, where a smooth and a credible campaign process, which we anticipated to shape and define the politics of Nigeria, has been substituted and replaced with vulgar, violent, and vicious, as well as deadly, political campaign between Abubakar's camp versus President Buhari's camp. It's very unfortunate that Nigeria is defining democracy with a signature of political violence and thuggery in that manner. But it simply means that there are many lessons we need to learn on how to do politics. There are also many lessons of Nigeria we need to learn on why and how we can improve and Africanize democracy, because democracy in its Western model, using the copy and paste concept, I think seems to be facing a lot of challenges in many parts of Africa. We saw it in the DRC Congo in December. We saw it in the previous months in other parts of Africa where they had the national vote. And we are seeing it also in Nigeria now, this week and this weekend, as they vote, that political violence has become the main common denominator. And I also sense that that's what will be happening in Malawi in the next few weeks. So it's like the tug of war between the sitting government and the opposition is too vicious and deadly, to the extent that the struggle for power has made people who are supposed to campaign and conduct politics in the spirit of brothers and sisters are now conducting politics in the spirit of enemies as well as rivals, basic rivals in this case. So it's a very unfortunate development, but by law, Nigeria has to have a national and a presidential vote this weekend. And I know that they are not going to reverse, they just need to vote. But it's very unfortunate that their politics and campaigns so far have been defined with a clear political thuggery and political violence, which is very unfortunate.
Absolutely. Chris Zimba, policy analyst, managing director, Democracy Center and Zambia. You can follow him at africademocracyjournal.com. Chris Zimba, as always, thanks for chatting to us, and see you next week.
Thank you so much. It's always my pleasure to be on this platform, and greetings to everyone.